south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Are you ready for a shocker? Most of you listeners out there are really tuned in to the alternative media, and I always seem to get a bunch of emails and advance warning on breaking news that doesn't hit the usual corporate-controlled media sources. Like, for example, in the last few days, I've been bombarded with emails from listeners giving me links to that breaking story on December 4th, 2016, just a few days ago. That was when Obama signed into law H.R. 22, a five-year, $305 billion infrastructure spending bill to address the nation's aging and congested transportation systems. Who wouldn't vote on that, right? So that new bill signed into law, though very expensive, it seems boring and innocuous enough, huh? However, buried on page 1,113 of this massive bill was a landmark chapter entitled, get this, Revocation or Denial of U.S. Passports in the Case of Certain Tax Delinquencies. And I'm paraphrasing from an article that comments on this new law. It says, this section gives the IRS control over your person, your right to travel, your right to live, work, bank, invest, your right to protect your assets and conduct business outside of the U.S. Now, a few years ago on The Expat Files Living in Latin America, I mentioned that the U.S. government tried the same thing back in 2012. It was proposed and there was resistance, so it didn't pass. But now, as the Big Brother state gets bigger, bolder, all-encompassing, and ever more threatening, and more broke and desperate, this time Congress pulled it off. It's law now. And now for the sad details. H.R. 22 adds Section 7345 to the Internal Revenue Code. The new law says the State Department can revoke, deny, or limit passports for anyone the IRS certifies as having seriously delinquent tax debt that is in excess of $50,000. Now, analysts interpret this to mean that the IRS can now revoke passports if anyone owes back taxes or have unfiled returns that they think exceeds $50,000. And the thing is, they don't have to prove that you owe it. They just have to say you owe it. It's not like you go to tax court, a judge decides you owe more than $50,000 and then block your passport or don't renew it. The amazing thing is, the IRS or the IRS computers decide internally whether you owe $50,000 or more, and they can, if they want, just put the order out and do it. You think they're going to send you a letter or an email saying they've blocked your passport? No way. Oh, that's not to say you don't find out about it eventually. You will, believe me. And at the most inopportune time, too. And that $50,000 threshold amount includes interest and penalties. Now, some of you out there are painfully aware that the IRS can nail you with interest and penalties compounded. That said, here's a story that's close to home. As luck, bad luck, would have it, one of my expat friends told me he had an $8,000 IRS debt that he was sure he didn't owe. And that came out of an IRS computer-generated estimated tax form. He didn't get the notice for 3.5 years because he moved around a lot and the mail forwarding kind of sucked. Meanwhile, the notice or notices were in the hands of another stellar government operation, the U.S. mail. So he moved a number of times, was in and out of the country quite a bit, enough to easily qualify for that foreign earned income tax exemption. You do remember me talking about that expat tax exemption, don't you? Spoken about it a number of times in past shows. So, for many years, he never had to pay a single cent in taxes. And totally legal, too. But what he didn't know, because he was out of the country, was that some IRS computer spit out an estimated tax bill for $8,000. By mistake, he didn't owe it. But by the time he found out about it 3.5 years later, the interest and penalties on it pumped that mistaken bill up to $32,000. So in the end, with some difficulty, he was able to straighten it out. But imagine if that happened now, today. Like he said, another half a year or so of not knowing about that, it would have topped $50,000 and more. And surely they'd have blocked his passport. So then you might ask, how do you get it unblocked? Don't ask. So what does that mean to all us expats, gonna-bes, wannabes, and regular listeners out there? Well, if you get your passport revoked and you don't have a second passport in hand, you will be prevented from traveling outside the U.S. And if you're outside the U.S. when you get your passport revoked, you won't even know about it. Then when you try to go from one country to another, as you check through the airport, they'll pull you aside into one of those cubicles, read you the riot act, call the U.S. Embassy, and tell them you're in the country illegally. For once, you're the illegal alien. How's that for irony? And in most cases, you'll be deported back to the U.S. However, if you have a second passport, then you're fine. Life goes on as usual. In fact, you'll even be pretty safe, at least for the time being, if you were smart enough to get permanent or temporary residence in that country you find yourself in if your passport gets revoked. Now, it's true, there are lots and lots of gringos and expats living in Central and South America whose passports are not revoked, but they've expired. Some of these guys have been down here 15, 20, 25, 30, 40 years. I've run into these guys on occasion. They're usually in a small town or way out in the boonies, well off the gringo tourist trail. Many are married to Latins and have a bunch of kids and have kind of homesteaded. Most of them came because they were running from something. Some of them even from the Vietnam draft, believe it or not. Yep, I've met guys down here who go back that far. They just simply fell off the radar intentionally. So then why haven't they been picked up and deported? Well, many of them who went through the process of temporary and permanent residency have a second passport, so they're not worried. And the ones that haven't, they're kind of stuck in the country, sort of in perpetual limbo. Nope, they're not going to be picked up and deported unless they've committed or are suspected of a major crime. The thing is, in almost all Latin countries, especially the ones off the gringo tourist trail, there are no immigration patrols or task forces out looking for gringos in the hinterlands that haven't got their paperwork in order. If you're a good citizen or a laid-back person with a low profile, nobody cares. That's not to say, for example, that a vindictive person couldn't call the country's immigration office and report that the gringo tenant or next-door neighbor is without paperwork and has been living in the country for years and years, hiding from something. Sure, that's possible. In fact, there's one specific Latin country that happens all the time. One guess, Costa Rica. If you remember, I mentioned on a past show that Costa Rica really cracks down on foreigners working in the country without a permit, and it's very difficult to get that authorization. Many hoops to jump through. So Costa Rica's very strict about that, yet other Latin countries off the gringo tourist trail are so lenient and enforcement so non-existent that it's a joke. Meaning, gringos and expats who want to work mundane jobs at bars and restaurants and hotels can easily find work. No permits, no permissions, it's all done with cash. In fact, I could take you on a tour of dozens of towns and bring you into bars and restaurants and introduce you to gringos and foreigners of all kinds, Europeans, etc., working full and part-time jobs for cash, food, drinks, even room and board. Mostly 20 and 30-something backpacker types who liked it so much when they got here, they just don't want to leave. In fact, I can't tell you how many first-world musicians I've run into working at clubs and bars in Latin America, even bussing tables there when they're not entertaining. And you know, it used to be like that in Costa Rica some 20 years ago, but now that the gringos have invaded and tourism is their number one business, they insist the tourists spend money but not work and earn money. Now, in Costa Rica, if you're caught working without a real permit issued by the government, they'll assess a fine, kick you out of the country, and list you in their immigration computers and files as a troublemaker. And they can block you from entering the country in the future. That's why if you go to a bar or a bed and breakfast or a hotel in Costa Rica, get this, by law they're required to post a little sign or a sticker provided by the government that says, call this phone number to report employer abuses and employment anomalies. Gringos call it the Punish Your Boss program. Because remember, it's gringos and foreigners who created almost all of the mom-and-pop tourism and service-related businesses in Costa Rica. And yes, Costa Rica is one Latin country that does have a well-staffed and well-funded immigration/labor police. So note, if you're a DJ on the beach at a Jaco bar and some jealous or jilted Costa Rican's got it in for you, maybe he thinks a Costa Rican should have that job, well, he knows just the phone number to call. And those immigration cops will show up, usually within an hour or two. Now, in the rest of Latin America, there are no signs and stickers and numbers to call to report immigration or so-called labor anomalies. Now, when I think of a labor anomaly, I'm thinking about a four-fingered guy working quality control in a glove factory. But I digress as usual. Back to that business about getting your passport revoked or blocked because of IRS tax problems or perceived IRS tax problems. Because, you know, you don't have to be in the U.S. to have the IRS trump up charges on you. You know that. All you have to do is look in the papers and check the media. You'll see it happens all the time. And it's been proven time and time again that the IRS has faulty data, faulty computer systems, and if you call the IRS Q&A hotline, depending on the agent answering the phone, you could get a number of different answers, none of which are correct. That, too, has been proven time and time again. In fact, there's not one single person out of the tens of thousands of IRS workers who knows the IRS code in full. The U.S. tax code is over 70,000 pages now. You've heard the horror stories. You've seen 2020 and 60 Minutes. Anything can happen with the IRS. Witness any number of 85-year-old great-grandmas who've been dragged into tax court, stripped of everything except their adult diapers. We've all heard those stories, and they're true, which is why time's a wasting, and it's way overdue for you to get yourself out of old vomit land. Oh, and by the way, if you think I get a certain amount of hate mail for bashing politicians, just last week, one guy sent me an email saying, "Johnny, I'm surprised there's not a drone with your name on it." And I replied, "There probably is, but since I refuse to get a smartphone, there's no GPS coordinates to hone in on." But where was I? Oh, yeah. First things first. As Uncle Sam slowly closes the barn door on its sheep, you must plan now to get your permanent or temporary residency down here. Even that's getting harder and harder. And your best fast-track way to do that? Come down to one of my Latin Insider seminars and you'll find out not only how to go about doing that, you'll get introduced to the right people to get you started on it immediately. And my next seminar is a month away. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's 2016 Latin Seminar link. And by the way, I've had a lot of inquiries from people asking me about being able to put that residency package together when they're down at the seminar, how much more time they might have to stay beyond the seminar, etc. Well, the answer to that is 10 days to 2 weeks past the seminar, because you'll have to make a trip or two down to the immigration office when they say they're ready to see you. But most importantly, you have to bring the proper paperwork down with you first. In fact, it's best to send that paperwork down a week or two before the seminar so our lawyer can have it translated into Spanish and get the process moving. And yes, people have asked, do they have time to get that paperwork together? It's about a month from the seminar. Yes, you can do it. In fact, I've put together a special report on exactly how to go about doing it and what you need, what you have to do up in the States before you come down, the whole process. If you haven't seen that report, in brief, it goes like this. First, it involves getting a sheriff or police report. Then you have to have that certified by your own state's State Department. Bet you didn't even know your state had a State Department. Sounds redundant, doesn't it? But then again, all governments are redundant, aren't they? So anyway, your state has a State Department within it, and it will authenticate documents. Then after that, the document has to go to the nearest Latin country consulate of the country you plan on getting residency in. And by the way, if you're interested in getting a copy of my residency report that spells all of this out completely, just send me an email. Oh, and by the way, the U.S. government has thrown a recent wrench into the works that slows down the process once you get here and try to apply. Yes, they're trying to make it tougher every day for people to get residency in a foreign country, and that's why it's imperative to get that process started right now. So then how has Uncle Sam made it harder in these last few months? Well, you see, one of the steps to get your residency in a foreign country is to make a stop at the U.S. Embassy in that Latin country. And before you do that, back at home in the U.S., you have to have had that good conduct police report authenticated. That means in the last step in the process, you've had it stamped and signed by the Latin consulate of the country you wish to have your residency in. Then you DHL or FedEx that stuff to your lawyer in Latin America. Then your lawyer takes that paperwork to an official government translator, and that takes a few days to translate it into Spanish, which is why if you send it down ahead of time, you don't have to sit around and wait for that. But you do have to come down at least once to appear at the immigration office with your paperwork and sign a few things. And note, there's another key piece of paperwork you have to submit at that time. Simply a certified copy of your U.S. passport. Sounds easy, right? Just go down to your post office in the States and have it certified. Wrong. You have to have your U.S. passport certified in the U.S. consulate in the country that you're going to get your residency in. So, for example, if you're in Honduras, you personally have to take your U.S. passport down to the U.S. consulate in Honduras. Hand your passport over, pay them $50, and a couple hours later, you can get your passport back and a certified copy from the embassy. By the way, $50 is awful steep, a ripoff, compared to when Latins get their passport certified for only $10. Now, just a year ago, you didn't even have to bring your passport in personally to do that. You could give it to your Latin lawyer, and one of his assistants from his office would go down to the U.S. Embassy and have it authenticated. They don't allow that anymore. You have to do it in person. But then, just about a month ago, another roadblock. You can no longer walk down to the U.S. Embassy, the U.S. consulate in the Latin country you're in, and say, "Here's my $50, please give me a certified copy of my passport, you extortionists." Oh, you still got to give them $50, all right, but guess what? You can't walk in and do that anymore. You got to go online and make an appointment. And that appointment comes up in a week or so. That said, if you're coming down to Guatemala, Salvador, Honduras, Peru, whatever, to get that residency started, you're going to have to wait around for a week or so just to get that required certified copy of your passport from your own U.S. consulate. Another delay tactic. You really have to wonder what they're going to pull next. In other words, if you don't have a connection with a lawyer in a country that you're going to get your residency in, you're going to spend an extra week and possibly an extra grand for expenses just waiting around with your thumb up your trasero. And worse, the U.S. State Department never officially notified anyone of the change. But you'd soon find out when you went down to the embassy and saw the notice on the door. Attention Kmart zombies. No more walk-ins. All appointments must now be made online. Or something like that. So, over the last few months, a lot of gringos got stuck for a week or two in the country, having to pay extra expenses and changing those airline tickets, and all the hassles and stress that go along with last-minute changes like that. Bottom line, time is short. You better get going on that residency. So, once again, let me repeat. You have time to get all that paperwork and stuff together and come down to my seminar, which is the second week in January now, and get the main steps done for your residency. Again, it's very apparent the U.S. government does not want us to get residency in foreign countries. Why? That's because in many cases, after about 5 years, it leads to a passport and citizenship. And then, after you've got that second passport, you can flip Uncle Sam the bird. Let him revoke passports. Let him make international travel more and more difficult for U.S. residents. It won't matter to you. You're a citizen of another country, too, and you can take that passport and travel on it if the U.S. one gives you trouble. And unfortunately, we all know of cases where straight, upstanding American citizens have been screwed by the government. So don't think because you obey all the rules and have got nothing to hide, that can't happen to you. Sorry, bub. A lot of guys and gals with absolutely sterling records and nothing to hide have lost everything because their names somehow popped up on a government feces list. Maybe they own a gun. Maybe they belong to a couple of food co-ops. Maybe they store too many canned goods in the basement. God forbid they collect their own rainwater. Or perhaps they've tossed out one too many angry tweets. Guilty, huh? Oh, and by the way, I've been getting emails lately from people saying they can't make the next seminar. When am I going to do another one? And yes, I probably will do another seminar in July. However, the future is not looking very good there up in the first world. And if the social and economic system up there holds out for another 6 months, well, then I'll have another seminar. If not, all bets are off. Of course, nobody knows what's going to trigger the implosion. Could come out of Europe. Could be you'll wake up and find out every ATM machine in the U.S. is shut down. Hack attack, terrorist attack, another Fukushima, currency meltdown, Kim Kardashian's butt explodes. Who knows what the first domino is going to be. But whatever sets it off, it's coming and it's the big one. God, I'm glad I'm in Latin America. So I do hope you're well into your own plan B and you're not just talking or daydreaming about it. Okay, are you scared yet? You should be. Now, how about an email? Dear Johnny, I was wondering if you could answer a question concerning Social Security. A large part of the show, you talk about how Social Security would be enough to live on if you were somewhere that's off the beaten path. But then you mentioned many times that the economy in the U.S. is about to collapse. Also, you made mention that Social Security will still be there, but it does sound contrary to me. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Thanks a lot, Johnny. Signed, Joe, near Philly. Okay, Joe, here's how most of us think it's going to play out. When the old vomit finally hits the fan, down here anyway, the dollar will still be king, somewhat. Let me explain. Now remember, there are hundreds of thousands of expats down here in Latin America collecting Social Security, and a lot of them getting Social Security disability payments too. And by the way, that disability thing's a whole other issue. If you get disability up in the States now, don't think you can't still collect when you're down here. In fact, most people tell me they get double the payment for disability than they would if they were just on Social Security's regular benefits. That's true if you're in the States or not. Now, regarding people who do get Social Security disability down here in Latin America, I understand the qualification rules are slightly different than up in the States. In other words, much more lax. According to one expat down here who gets those benefits, to qualify up in the States, you have to go to a doctor and get certified disabled and return once a year at least and have that qualification verified again. So then what happens if you're collecting Social Security disability up in the States and you decide to move out of the country? Let's say to Latin America. In that case, it's not necessary or even required that you go back once a year and get checked by a U.S. doctor. Turns out, as long as you're out of the country, you do continue to receive those payments. However, if you make a trip back to the States, then it's necessary, he says, for you to visit a doctor in the States again for proof that you're still disabled. So, if you leave the country and you're getting disability, you kind of get a free pass for, apparently, years and years and years. However, like this guy mentioned, you better have a backup doctor in Latin America ready and willing to produce some paperwork in English if your disability is ever questioned. So then, what if you're down here in Latin America and your Social Security payments don't come or the amounts are screwed up? Well, most long-term expats down here who are on Social Security anyway, they've told me that any time they've had an issue and couldn't work it out on the Social Security website or on the Social Security 800 hotline, they just go down to the local American consulate in whatever Latin country they're in. Turns out there's always a person there that can help with Social Security problems. Again, that said, yes, the U.S. and the First World will implode when you have multiple trillion-dollar unfunded debts like the U.S. has. It can't be any other way. So then, as our emailer asks, what's going to happen to Social Security then? Well, I can tell you for sure the payments will keep on coming. And since down here in Latin America anyway, all local funny money currencies, pesos, bolivars, lempiras, cordobas, whatever, have always in the long run lost steadily against the dollar. And you have to remember something very important. In the eyes of Latin Americans, the U.S. always was and will always be in their minds, number one. The U.S. and everything about it is the role model for all third world countries. And that, of course, includes the U.S. dollar. And the fact is, if you sit down with a bunch of Latins here in Latin America, whether they're university graduates, doctors, high school graduates, or shoeshine boys, first of all, they just can't believe that a person would leave the U.S. and live in Latin America. Because, hell, they're all running, jumping, and swimming as fast as they can to get there, right? So, they like us expats, but they do think we're slightly off-kilter. Secondly, when you start bringing up the reasons, all the negatives of why you left the U.S., they just don't believe it. It goes against every notion they have about the First World. And get this, here you left because of many reasons, and they actually stick up for the U.S. They try to defend it in your face. Talk about all the things they think are great. Social Security, welfare, the grand safety net, the minimum hourly wage that's a daily wage for them down here. Of course, they'll tell you about all the freebies they've heard about in the States too. But beware, if you tell your new Latin neighbors that you left Ovomit land because it's a fascist Big Brother state, you'll probably never get invited to those quinceañeros parties. Then again, maybe that's a good thing. So if you tell them the truth about the U.S., they not only won't believe it, they'll think you were the one who went off the rails. And please don't tell them the dollar's only a worthless piece of paper unbacked by gold. Now, the real topper and the reason why the U.S. dollar will always be number one in the minds of all Latins, they believe gringo politicians are brilliant statesmen. Now, unlike their own corrupt, lard-ass politicians, they believe U.S. politicians can and will survive and surmount any crisis. Now, oddly enough, if you ask a fairly bright Latin person what crises and disasters American politicians have surmounted, they can't seem to think of any. Though some Latins will say World War I, World War II, Vietnam. What? Vietnam? Yep, that's right. Latins think we won the Vietnam War. In fact, according to Latins, we won every single war we've ever been in. Even the one in their own backyard, the war on drugs. They think the U.S. is winning that one, too. Now, remember, I mentioned this in a past show. I've never met a single Latin, I don't care if he's got a double doctorate or he's a shoeshine boy, who knew that in 2007 or 8, the U.S. financial system nearly collapsed completely and brought the entire world economic system down with it. Not to mention, I never met a Latin who knew we had a dot-com bubble either. Nor do Latins know we had a real estate blowout. And the student loan debt crisis, bigger than the credit card bubble in the States, they don't know what that is either. Never heard of it. Oh, and by the way, Latins are starting to pick up on the fact that if they get residency in the States, they too can get tens of thousands of dollars worth of free school loans. So Latins believe all the misinformation and tripe coming out of the first world media. They don't believe for a second that the international finance system's on the edge of collapse. They have no idea that back in 2007 and 2008, the U.S. Congress passed a law to bail out all those too big to fails. So if you mention QE 1, 2, or 3, even to the well above average Latin person, he thinks you're talking about a smartphone app or Queen Elizabeth. So bottom line, the U.S. and the U.S. dollar are held in such high esteem here in Latin America. When that big first world financial crisis does hit, I really do believe there will be a rush into dollars down here. Because history shows that every local or nationwide Latin financial crisis, like for example Venezuela, Argentina, whatever, when they implode, and they do on a somewhat cyclical basis, their citizens rapidly dump their own funny money and rush into dollars. Many of us long-term expats have been at ground zero when these economic disasters happen, which is why most of us predict that's what's going to happen again. The locals will dump their money and rush into dollars, at least at first. So we believe the dollar will prevail down here. Sure, it'll lose some of its value, but the local funny money's going to get creamed.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.